Out and turn to Acts chapter 10. Acts chapter 10. Kaufman wrote a one-page overview on this chapter that I will begin with first. And he said, Acts chapter 10 chronicles the beginning of the preaching of the gospel to the Gentiles. Until this point in New Testament history, the gospel had been restricted to the Jews only. Beginning here, God's kingdom was open to both Jews and Gentiles. Luke's devoting so much space to the narrative of a single conversion indicates the importance of it. It was in the conversion of this Roman centurion that the issue of receiving Gentiles into Christ was finally decided. Yes, other Gentiles had been saved prior to this, but it was upon the basis of their having first been converts in Judaism. Many of the earliest Christians, most of whom were Jewish, were willing to welcome Gentiles into the faith as proselytes. Proselytes first and Christians later, and the proselytes are Jewish converts. So these were Gentiles that converted to Judaism. And then only those were the ones that they were would teach to become Christians. And they were not allowing any Jews that were not already a Jewish convert to become Christians up until this point. God's going to show Peter that that is going to change. And then Peter, then in Acts 11 and subsequent places, is going to then have to convince the other disciples and apostles about this, which he does. Cornelius's baptism was the end of that, despite the fact of Judaizers continuing to advocate the old view for a considerable time afterward, as seen in Paul's epistles. So it was still an uphill battle for quite some time, but anyway it just took some time for them to accept that Gentiles were now able to be part of God's kingdom. This devout Gentile was chosen by God and was allowed to experience things such as visitation by an angel, hearing the gospel preached by one of the 12, and having the Holy Spirit fall upon him in a manner identical to that of Pentecost. There are about 10 centurions mentioned in the New Testament, and without exception, they all appear in a favorable and commendable light. In the worldly condition of the Roman Empire at that time, the non-commissioned officers of the imperial army constituted something of a remnant of the ancient virtues of honesty, sobriety, integrity, and the fear of God. Only this could account for the number and character of the centurions mentioned in the New Testament. And this was something that I would have never put together. In fact, Timothy had never put this together. But I mentioned this to him, that Kaufman had pointed out that there is never a centurion mentioned in a negative light. Every time a centurion is mentioned in the entire New Testament, it's in a positive light. And so that is something good for us to know and put together. And so I was thankful that Kaufman put it together, because I would not have. So we will, or I don't think that I would have. We'll start with Acts chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. There was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of what was called the Italian regiment or cohort, a devout man and one who feared God with all his household, who gave alms generously to the people and prayed to God always. Okay, so now looking back at our map, here, where we left Peter was, he was staying here in Joppa, which is the natural port city, which was not very good, but it was the best port town that they had, and that was a natural seaport. And he was staying with a tanner named Simon. And so this is where Peter is here at this time. Now, Luke has drawn our attention up here some 25 or so miles to the north along the coast to this Caesarea, which, as we stated here a few weeks ago, that Caesarea was a man-made port. So this was like high technology for the day, and this was where all of the ships would come to bring goods in and to take goods out, and people also, which Kaufman's point is, he had this built here just a few decades before, but just in time, it was fully functional for the apostles, namely the apostle Paul on his missionary journey, because he launched his missionary journeys from Caesarea. And from this really nice man-made seaport. But this is the location where this man named Cornelius, who is a centurion, he's a head over 100 soldiers for the Roman army. This is where he is. And Kaufman's comment on this is, the word for regiment here actually means cohort. Usually the 10th part of a Roman legion, but a detached cohort, as this evidently was at Caesarea, usually had 1,000 men. The regiment was divided into hundreds, each commanded by a centurion. So the regiment or the cohort was made up of 1,000 men. Then each cohort or regiment was divided into tenths, down to 100 each, and then this man Cornelius was head over one of these 100 men. The regiment was divided into hundreds, each commanded by a centurion. It is strange that the decimal system prevailed in that ancient army, and today the same organization has been extended to all weights and measures in the metric system. And Kaufman said that it's strange, but this is exactly the a good way to do it is division by a magnitude of tens and a multiplication of tens and division of tens, hundreds, thousands. And then Kaufman, I was glad that he brought this up because the metric system is a far superior weights and measures over what we use here, the U.S. Weights and measure system that we use when it comes to calculations in science and math, because everything is just moving the decimal. It's multiplying or dividing by multiples of 10. And then, which I'd heard years ago, it was in the 70s with President Nixon. And he said, I don't remember the time frame, but I don't know. I don't even know if he gave a time frame, but I think he did. Like in 5 or 10 years, the U.S. was going to convert completely over to the metric system. Well, that never did happen except in science and math. And it did convert over in the math and science. So whenever we do any calculations, it's in the metric system in any measurements. So that has made calculations much easier, but we still buy gasoline by the gallons and not by the liter, and we measure our distance in miles and not kilometers. So, but anyway, that is a comparison and contrast of what they had at that time. They were using their division in tens, hundreds, and thousands. So Kaufman continues here. The devout, God-fearing Cornelius had enlisted his entire household as participants in the worship and devotions which were practiced by them. And this stresses the quality of that house where Peter would open the door of the kingdom to the Gentiles by the only possible key, the word preached in the power of the Holy Spirit. Yes, without doubt, this is the second and last instance of Peter's using the keys which Jesus had given him, the first being in Acts 2. And I mentioned in the previous lesson, if a door is never locked again, then you never have to use the key again. So Peter only used each key once in Acts 2 for the Gentiles, for the Jews, and then here in Acts 10 for the Gentiles to unlock the gates to the kingdom of heaven to allow each of them respectively to become Christians and become members of God's kingdom. It is truly amazing to realize that this soldier who has risen to the rank of centurion in the Roman army, a Gentile whom neither law of Moses nor the gospel has been extended, because he was a Gentile and he wasn't a Jew. The law of Moses was only to given to the Israelites, and then Jewish converts were also allowed to be under that too. But he was neither of those. Neither the law of Moses nor the gospel has been extended, is nonetheless a reverent, God-fearing man. It is the will of God that such a man as this devout centurion will be the first Gentile to enter God's kingdom. Cornelius is a praying man. We can assume that what is about to happen is the answer to Cornelius's prayer. Not only does Cornelius pray, but God hears his prayer. This is further evidence that until now, Cornelius has been righteous in the sight of God, because as the blind man said in John 9, verse 31, "Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him," which this is a very important verse, John 9:31, that disproves a very widespread false teaching that is very unfortunate, that to become a Christian, all you have to do is say the sinner's prayer. This verse very well disproves that. God does not hear the prayer of the sinner. He only hears the prayer of the righteous and those who worship God. So the sinner's prayer is completely unbiblical and is unfortunate that it has led many astray, because people are not doing as the Bereans did in Acts 17 and searching the scriptures for themselves to see if what they're being taught is true. And that's unfortunate, but they're being misled and going down the broad way that leads to destruction. And he finishes up on these two verses with, "Cornelius is soon to learn that the Messiah has come between all men and God. If he expects to continue his relationship with God, he will have to do so through Jesus." So we will end there, and Lord willing, we will pick up with verse 3 next week.